Hello and welcome to Behind the Buyouts, the Deals podcast, where we sit down with private equity and venture capital practitioners and talk about their deals and deal making. I'm your guest host, Nikita Satyaraju, consumer and retail reporter for The Deal. We have with us today Anne Chung, who is managing director and global head of consumer for Blackstone Growth, and Kelly Morell, who is global head of asset management in the Blackstone Tactical Opportunities Group. They're here to talk to us about Blackstone's latest investment in Spanx, the firm's efforts to diversify its own ranks, as well as back more minority-led businesses, and more. Anne has been investing in the consumer sector her entire career. Having worked at L. Catterton, Swander Pace Capital, and J.H. Whitney, she joined Blackstone early last year. Kelly has been a banker with Goldman Sachs, an associate at Hellman & Friedman, a part of the U.S. Treasury Department during the Obama administration, and worked at CIT Group before joining Blackstone 4 years ago. Anne, Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Anne, Spanx is one of the most popular shapewear brands out there, and Sarah Blakely has bootstrapped it for 21 years. This is the first outside investment for the company. I'm curious to know how the deal came together.
Yeah, we've been following Sarah's story for a number of years now. She's an impressive person, and she's built a quite impressive business and brand. And we've been in touch throughout. As Sarah's kind of built this business over the last 21 years, she's been approached by a number of different parties about outside investment and has consistently turned it down. The business over the last few years has made an incredible pivot into the digital side of things. And now their DTC side is about 2/3 of the business. And they've also widened the product categories and assortment that they provide into more apparel. And as the business has grown in size, I think Sarah has really done some soul searching. And earlier this year, she made the decision on her end to go out and seek a partner. But she was incredibly intentional about the party that she was willing to partner with, that she wanted to make sure that her partner was someone that was going to be a good steward for the business and the brand. And so we've spent a number of months and a number of dinners and lunches and breakfasts and lots of just time together, really understanding her vision for the future and what made her business so successful to date, and how do we enhance and amplify what she's done. And I think that investment in time and in the relationship really helped her to make the decision to bring in a partner, and specifically Blackstone. And I think it was the combination of both the relationship development work that we put in, but it was also the resources that we bring to bear here at Blackstone. And I think the excitement around taking a brand so special as Spanx and bringing it into our family at Blackstone with the resources and scale and the global positioning that we have here, I think that's what makes us really exciting and is something that we think is an opportunity in the future in driving the business to continue to accelerate their growth.
This is sort of a full circle moment for you. I remember you telling me about watching Sarah Blakely on 60 Minutes years ago, and now you get to work with her and invest in her business. Tell me about that.
So it was definitely surreal. I remember just thinking at dinner one time, just sitting across the table from her, and the vision came to me of sitting in my family's living room and watching 60 Minutes with my dad. And she was on with Warren Buffett talking about the Giving Pledge and her commitment to the Giving Pledge. And then being able to sit across the table from her and really talk more about her business and how I can be helpful in driving her business, I think was a really surreal moment for me. So it was super exciting. And it has become full circle. And it's great to be partners with Sarah, who's just a wonderful human being.
That's great. So what do the consumer growth and tactical opportunity strategies typically look for in their investments?
Yeah, I mean, on the consumer side, we really have this thesis that the brands of tomorrow, the sort of next generation of household brands, are going to be very different than the brands of yesterday. The infrastructure has changed dramatically to support a fragmentation of brands and businesses. And so our focus at Blackstone and our consumer side has really been about category defining brands. Brands that are creating a new category, they're creating something that's different. Our first investment, it was a business called Oatly, which is the leader today in oat milk and driving the oat milk category globally. And our team has also led a couple of other investments, including a business called We, which is the leader in ethnic e-grocery, so online grocery delivery for ethnic communities. And then I think Spanx is really kind of a nice complement to what we're doing on the consumer side, like tissue and Kleenex, those brands that are synonymous with the category in and of itself. And there's embedded brand value to those businesses. You know, a lot of consumer investing is about the efficiency of the marketing spend. a lot of the sort of DTC businesses that we're seeing today that are high flyers tend to be unprofitable because they're driving consumer awareness through customer acquisition costs. And when you're doing that, you create a dynamic where you're constantly feeding a marketing budget to help drive awareness and create bigger and bigger awareness of your brand and your products. What we really liked about Spanx and Oatly and some of these others is that there's some efficiency to what they're doing because brand recognition, brand awareness is high, product quality is extremely good. And when you kind of couple the very strong product quality elements of these businesses with an emotional brand that resonates with consumers, that has embedded value because consumers know them, that's where you create real efficiency in the spend. And so we're excited about the businesses that we've invested behind and what we're building in consumer within Blackstone.
And I would say on tactical opportunities, this is a business that was started in 2011 after the financial crisis. And it really was started to take advantage of opportunities and dislocations in a wide variety of markets across the economy. And over the past 10 years, the business really has matured. And we oftentimes invest in what we call good neighborhoods. And so behind specific themes, consumer obviously being one of them, where there are big disruptors in the space. And the business really is set up such that we're focused on partnering with great entrepreneurs and management teams. And oftentimes we'll back founders and be their first institutional capital. And, you know, we're comfortable coming in and taking a minority stake, preferred stake, a structured equity stake. And deals like Spanx oftentimes start in one place and they may migrate into a different structure as we learn more about the business, as we learn more about the founder, and ultimately the solution that we can provide to them. And in fact, Blackstone's investment in Bumble, we really were backing a female-focused business and a female entrepreneur, first started in TacOps actually as a structured investment. And over time, as we got to know the team, as we got to know the business, you know, we became really, really taken with the overall investment thesis and with the tailwinds that were in the industry, and decided ultimately to turn that from a structured investment in TacOps into a majority control investment. And I think, you know, Anne and I talk about this a lot, that, you know, Bumble was sort of the first, like I said, of those female-focused businesses that we invested in. And I think it really opened the aperture for us to think more holistically about the types of businesses that Blackstone as a fund can invest in. And having people like Anne and I on the other side of the table, where we're able to identify with the entrepreneur, with the employee base, and ultimately with the end customer, I think really creates, you know, a massive, massive advantage for us in the overall sort of asset management industry.
And looking at the industries, the subsectors that you're investing in, what has Shapewear been like as a sector over the past couple of years?
Prior to COVID, Shapewear is a category that saw mid-single digits growth overall. And in COVID, obviously, I think two things impacted the category. First of all, the wholesale channel, obviously the sort of brick and mortar retailers were closed for a lot of 2020. And I think part of the shapewear category is driven by occasion wear. So, you know, weddings and events and things like that. And obviously those weren't happening. So the category saw a dramatic decline in 2020. What we have been surprised to see year to date 21 is how much it's come roaring back. People are excited about going to events, going out. And that's obviously a derivative of the shapewear category, but also the wholesale channel. What we're seeing is while traffic continues to be down at retail stores, those that are going to retail stores are going with very strong intentions. So while traffic is down, we're seeing high rates of conversion at retail stores. And so the retail side of things, the wholesale side of the business is actually seeing a quite strong 2021. The category in and of itself is somewhat limited in its size, which I think is why it's super interesting that Spanx has been able to take their brand and really be able to leverage that into a broader category of apparel. And so the business today is seeing higher rates of growth as you think about some of their other products outside of shapewear. So intimates and leggings, their workwear pant, the Ponte pant, things like that. And so it's really denim. It's been a really exciting opportunity to see the brand really kind of grow some legs. And we've got a really exciting new product pipeline coming up next year that I think is going to drive some more growth.
By the way, no pun intended with Anne and the brand being able to grow some legs.
Good point, Kelly.
And what else do you have planned for Spanx in terms of growing the company under Blackstone?
Yeah, our thesis is predicated on a number of growth areas. I'd say, first of all, Sarah spent no money on advertising and marketing the first 16 years of the business. And then over the last 5 years, her marketing budget has been somewhat limited and really focused on performance marketing. So if you think about paid social, paid search, that kind of one-on-one interaction, she hasn't really invested any in the actual brand marketing in and of itself. And so we're really excited about investing behind the brand. Like I said, the consumer awareness is incredibly high for the brand, but we're excited to really invest in what the brand stands for and amplify the message that the brand has consistently lived up to for 21 years. So I think first and foremost, it's really about that sort of top of funnel brand marketing. Second, as we mentioned before, is going to be continued to expand the product assortment. Today, the product assortment is really kind of limited to 5 categories: shapewear, intimates, leggings and active, denim, and then the Ponte pant. With a lot of new categories yet to come, we're really excited about building out an assortment. And the company has seen an incredible amount of loyalty amongst its consumers. And so as you think about repeat purchase, as we're able to add more products, we're seeing this new news drive more consumers back to the site and drive purchase behavior that way. And then lastly, we're really excited about the international opportunity. The Spanx brand does resonate globally, and yet we don't really have that much of a presence, particularly on the .com side, outside of the US. And so Canada is the first market up early in 22, and then an expansion into Europe thereafter.
And you're also building out a female-focused board, right? Kelly, could you talk about that, especially because you did this at Bumble before?
Yeah, exactly. And so I actually think that a lot of the learnings that we were able to create in working with Bumble are heavily applicable to how we think about the value that we can bring to an investment like Spanx. And so with Bumble, after we acquired that business, Whitney Wolf Heard was 8.5 months pregnant at the time that we had signed the deal. And there was a ton that Whitney really wanted to get done in order to shape Bumble into being the business that it is today. And first and foremost, it was building out an incredible management team, complemented with a really, really strong majority female board. And I think oftentimes in this space and in financial services more broadly, you know, there's skepticism around building out diverse boards and diverse management teams, and an assumption oftentimes that in order to find incredible talent that happens to be diverse, you're somehow going to, you know, reduce your standards, which is just categorically not true. And we've been able to find incredible talent to build out our management teams and our boards of directors. And Spanx is absolutely no different. And so we've made a public pledge that ultimately we want to have a majority female and all female board, which we're already getting started on, and is something that I think ultimately will hopefully lay the groundwork for what we believe, you know, really is possible more broadly in corporate governance as we think about building boards of directors going forward.
That's great. And I'm going to take a step back and ask you about what the process looks like post-investment at Blackstone in general. Kelly, if you'd like to take that.
You know, I think oftentimes people think of private equity and acquiring a business and that all we're going to do is cut costs, which really just isn't true. And I think particularly on Spanx, but it's obvious in many of our other investments, that we really are focused on providing our management teams resources in order to grow. And so when we think about acquiring a business, we will surround the management team with the resources we have here at Blackstone. We have an entire team that's just focused on post-close value creation and helping our management teams think about everything from data science and analytics to building out their strong brands and marketing strategies. We have an entire team that's dedicated to helping augment management teams, build out boards of directors, and there's a really strong focus on ESG as we think about diversity at the board level, but also things like emissions reduction and ultimately bringing our companies into that next phase of where we think we're going to be able to take them. And so when we think about Spanx, Anne mentioned a number of the value levers that we believe we're going to be able to bring to the table around new products, new geographies, and really sort of augmenting the brand, which is just one part of our overall playbook. But I think we're really excited just as we think about getting started on this particular investment, all of the value really we're going to be able to deliver just by leveraging the resources that Blackstone has at its disposal.
One of the things that has been getting a lot of attention with the Spanx deal is, of course, Blackstone's all-women investment team. And can you tell us about how that came to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting that we've gotten so much attention about this because our team is entirely made up of women, and that was not the intention. We didn't set out to build a consumer team that was made up of all women. It was really an organic process and the result of ensuring that we had a great high quality, high caliber team. And so as openings on our team came up, we interviewed a number of people regardless of gender. And it happened that these were the people that were most qualified and really fit culturally with our team, but also were incredibly smart, incredibly bright women as part of our consumer investment team. And then when this opportunity came up to really dive into Spanx and making an investment in the company, we surveyed the team to talk about who is most interested and who is most excited, just more organically again, about the business and the brand. We staffed a team based on just genuine excitement and authentic enthusiasm for what this business stands for. And so ultimately, it really kind of developed really, truly organically amongst the team. I think one, it's also a symbol of what happens when you put women in positions where we are able to make hiring decisions is that we look at things from a different lens. And so I think that's really exciting about being able to build this more broadly across the consumer team. But I think it also jades how we look at an investment. I think that a team that's made up of a majority of men may not have seen the same sort of things that we saw in an investment merits around this business. And so we really drilled in as a team because we were authentically excited about the business and the brand, but then the metrics as we looked at it and kept diving in deeper, just kept getting better and better. And we got excited about the opportunity to really invest. And some of the value creation opportunities that Kelly mentioned were coming to life as we dug into our diligence deeper. And then as we built our team, our third-party advisors also organically developed all-female teams as well. And so we're advised by Simpson Thatcher that put together an all-female team, including all of their specialists from IP and HR and all the different areas that we pulled on. It was all led by female partners. And then our partners over at JP Morgan obviously put together a female team as well. And then some of our accounting, tax, market diligence providers were, I would say, more majority female teams. But it was exciting to really be on big Zooms with all these people, and it was all women. And we were really excited about the authentic connection to the business and the brand, and then also to be able to pull all these women together to accomplish something really important and special.
Yeah. And I would add that, you know, I think it is really unique that you had people like Anne and I on one side of the table who, again, are able to identify with the customers, with the employees, with the founders. And I think we were able to see something in a particular business because we are consumers of the product and we love the product. And also that enabled us to go to our investment committee and really have a very articulate investment thesis that, again, was based in the data. And so I think it's important that we probably highlight what that investment committee process is like, because it wasn't just that we wanted to invest in a female-focused or a female-founded business. Like, we invest in great businesses here, where we really believe that there's runway and that we can provide something that is differentiated to get our companies to that next stage. But the investment in Spanx really was predicated on the fact that it's an incredible business that Sarah has built. I don't know, Anne, if you want to talk a little bit about what that investment committee process is like.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, we have a fiduciary responsibility to our investors to invest their capital in a way that is prudent and provides the highest level of return. And for us, the process is no different, whether it's Spanx or Bumble or any of our other businesses within our portfolio. And so we use the same sets of filters. We had the same investment committee that opines on all of our other deals. It was the same regular way process as our other investments. And what's great about Spanx is that we were able to show, as a team that genuinely cared about the business and the brand, we were able to show metrics, and we were able to show a really interesting level of growth and profitability that went through all the filters that we have. I mean, it's not an investment committee that meets once and we're done. I mean, we're constantly updating the team and ensuring that we're checking all the boxes and making sure that we're having a high level of scrutiny and diligence across all of our businesses. And so Kelly and I talk a lot about this, but while we're excited about and celebrating the moment, this is a moment in time. And what we're really excited about is that hopefully in the future, this is an event that maybe won't get as much attention, and that this will just broadly be the way that the investment community works, and that men and women, regardless of gender, will be able to bring really exciting and interesting businesses to the table.
And I think Anne talked a little bit about the consumer team that she's built, which really is an amazing all-female team. I think Anne and I both feel a tremendous amount of responsibility as we think about that next generation that's coming up behind us to be able to pave a path for them so that, again, in the future, perhaps it won't be as newsworthy that it was an all-female team. Though I do think, again, having people like us on one side of the table enables us to have so much conviction around businesses that may not jump out as amazing opportunities and amazing underlying businesses to someone that isn't a consumer of the underlying product.
I was reading something Anna Sainsbury, the CEO of GeoComply, wrote about how she got introduced to Blackstone, and it was through Bumble CEO Whitney Wolf Heard. And so I'm curious to know how this word of mouth is sort of helping you find more women and minority-led businesses, because they're essentially creating this network for themselves.
Yeah, there's a very organic network that is developing, and it's not something that we have formalized or created, but Whitney, being the first of many female founders that we've now backed, I think had really tremendous experience in working with Blackstone, and we also had an incredible experience in working with Whitney. And I think that that organic word of mouth has created this network where, you know, Whitney spoke to Sarah Blakely before we made the investment in Spanx. Sarah spoke to Reese Witherspoon, who Blackstone had made an investment into her company, Hello Sunshine. And we've had this like very organic network of women that call upon each other. And again, it's not Blackstone having created a formal network or telling individuals that they should speak to each other. But I think one individual hears that they've had a great experience and they call up someone else to understand, well, what was it really like to work with Blackstone? Is everything that I'm reading about true? Are they really as collaborative and supportive of furthering your investment mission like they say they are? And I think that that feedback has been really authentic and has created this like wonderful network of women that has continued to persist. And so we've now backed a handful of female focused businesses and female entrepreneurs, including, you know, you mentioned Anna Sainsbury at GeoComply. Kristen Johnson is another female founder who founded a company called Hotwire Communications, which provides fiber to the home, that we backed last year. Medible is another female-founded business, and the list goes on and on. And again, I think we're hopeful that this organic network that seems to have developed will continue and ultimately enable us to tap into a wealth of new businesses that perhaps weren't on people's radar before.
And could you tell us a little bit more about some of these investments like GeoComply or Hello Sunshine and how those deals were struck and the process that went behind those?
Yeah, sure. So I'll focus on Hotwire Communications because it's actually a marquee deal that sits across two of our businesses. So our infrastructure fund and Tactical Opportunities took a 50% ownership stake in Hotwire Communications last year. And I think that the story actually is quite similar to the other founder-led businesses that we've backed, in that Kristen Johnson had started this company 20 plus years ago, and we were the first outside capital that she agreed to take to fund this incredible growth story. And coming into that investment, you know, it really was a partnership that we wanted to strike with her, just like we do with the rest of our founder partners, in thinking about what are the resources that Blackstone can bring to bear? How do we think about ingratiating ourselves with the founder and showing that we're really a strategic partner? We're not coming in to try to change your business. We're really thinking about, you know, how can we be a partner to you? How can we think about leveraging the resources, the breadth, the reach that Blackstone has to take your business to the next level? And with Kristen, you know, as we thought about expanding the business that she developed, you know, again, they provide Wi-Fi and fiber communications to homeowners associations and multifamily sort of apartment complexes. They primarily started in South Florida. They are expanding across the country. And so much of that is due to Kristen's amazing sort of entrepreneurialism, but leveraging the capital and the expertise and the relationships that Blackstone has. And again, I think that that story plays out over and over again as we think about Reese Witherspoon with Hello Sunshine or Anna Sainsbury and GeoComply.
And it's not just limited to the founders too, it's creating a network also around our C-suite as well. And so as we look at some of our other businesses like Ancestry and Articulate, we're also attracting female CEOs that I think are incredibly strong. And it's creating this broad network of just incredibly strong female leaders.
And I think it's about attracting them because they see that there's support and opportunity in a portfolio like Blackstone's, but also we're being really proactive and making sure that we're casting a wide net and looking for diverse talent as well.
Can you talk about what that process is like when you're out there looking for a diverse C-suite? How do you go about trying to find incredibly talented, demographically diverse people to fill your boards? Because all I keep hearing is, oh, we can't find them, but obviously you are. So I'm curious to know about the process.
I think it actually starts with making a public commitment and putting sort of a stake in the ground about what it is you're trying to build. And so Blackstone made a commitment about a year ago that we wanted all of the boards of directors where we have majority control to be one third diverse within the first 12 months of our ownership. And so because of that, as we think about something like Spanx, for example, it's been incredibly organic. Like we've gotten a ton of inbounds, both individuals that have raised their hand because they see that we're open to diverse talent and people that are across Blackstone or across the broader network, sending us resumes, sending us connections. And so I think it all starts again with making that first bold statement about what your objective is. And then you sort of get the ball rolling. And we have an internal talent bank within Blackstone where we now are storing a number of these references and names so that we have a deep pool of candidates that we can draw from. I think a lot of folks, as they're thinking about building boards and management teams, they'll go to the traditional sort of executive search route. And the executive search firms have been great partners to us, again, in being able to turn over and draw up talent. But I think, you know, Blackstone is such an incredible reach. That organic network that we've been able to cultivate, I think, creates this amazing feedback loop where we're able to get great talent to come in. And then I think it's having people like Anne and I who pound the table that we really want a diverse board. We really want an all-female board, and we're not going to rest until it actually happens.
And I think also Kelly and I bring a different network to the table here at Blackstone as well. And so as we at Blackstone think about our own hiring, I think it's also bringing that network in and opening the aperture of the folks that we think are just connected to the firm and then really investing in the relationship. So it's not going to be the next deal that we put all these people on a board, but if we find great talent, regardless of their background, we want to invest in that relationship for the long run, because at some point in time, it will result in something where we're excited about working together with some of these people on. And so I spend personally, and I know Kelly does as well, we spend a lot of time really cultivating our network and cultivating those relationships, because we know that there's a lot of high quality talent out there. And at the right point in time, it's all about timing. At the right point in time, we'll bring them into a situation where we could really use their experiences and talent.
And obviously that trickle down effect persists. If the more diverse an asset manager is, the more likely they are to back companies with more demographically diverse management. You obviously touched upon this, but I'm curious to know what other programs Blackstone has in place to increase minority representation at the firm.
I think we're probably the first to acknowledge that the entire industry still has a long way to go. But I think it starts by, again, putting a few stakes in the ground and demonstrating a willingness and an openness to address things like diversity more broadly in asset management. And so, you know, we touched on the fact that Blackstone has made a number of public commitments to our portfolio companies and diversity at the board level. But I think, it, like you said, it's a trickle-down effect. As we think about Blackstone more broadly, the firm has put in place a number of programs really to open the aperture of attracting diverse talent into the firm. And so we launched a program called Future Women Leaders and a corollary program called Future Diverse Leaders several years ago to really ensure that as we were thinking about the analyst class and the entry-level classes that come into the investment business, that they are representative more broadly of college graduating classes. And so the Future Women Leaders program this past year, we were able to attract 45% of the incoming analyst class as women, which is up from just 15% several years ago. And so I think with focus and a clear goal, you're able to make a tremendous amount of progress. But again, there's a long way to go. And I think as Anne said, we're hopeful that at some point, this is not something that we need to report on. That ultimately we have an analyst class and more broadly an investment professional base that is diverse and more reflective of the companies that we hope to invest in and their employee bases and customers more broadly.
And one of the interesting things that I was reading up on Blackstone's initiatives has to do with engaging with younger women about a potential career in asset management, because a lot of them do not see themselves represented in the industry. So they don't really think about it as a career option. I'm curious to know if you participate in any of those or what that engagement looks like.
Yeah, so I'm one of the co-chairs of Blackstone's Women's Initiative globally for the firm. And I think we did identify that women and talented women, to be frank, have a lot of options. And so you have to make it such that coming to a firm like Blackstone, choosing a career in financial services is compelling, and that women that are coming in see people that are like themselves in senior positions, and they see that there's a career path. And so I think we found that we were losing women even earlier in the process than I think we had thought. And so we created a program that really targets women at their sophomore year in college. And we even have less formalized programs that start identifying women just at their freshman year in college, educating them about what a career at Blackstone could look like, and then providing them with an opportunity to come to the firm, learn more broadly about Blackstone and the asset management industry, meet senior leaders, both men and women across the firm, and get training so that they understand what a career in financial services could look like. And we found that that actually has been a huge opportunity for us, again, to broaden the aperture and ensure that we're capturing women earlier on in their career. And I think ultimately it's a really competitive job market. And so firms need to be on their front foot and creating an environment and a set of opportunities for someone's career.
Great. And I can't let this conversation end without talking about something that's on everybody's mind, valuations, and what that has been like in all the areas that you invest in, and consumer, and Kelly, with all the sectors that you invest in through tactical opportunities. What have they been like, and how is that maybe influencing the decisions that you're making?
Valuations have been high to very high. No, they are definitely influencing some of the decisions that we're making. And I think we're trying to be incredibly purposeful in the select opportunities that we spend our time in. And I think what we're really focused on is trying to find best of breed assets, because we know we're going to be paying full prices for a lot of our businesses. And so we're trying to pick our spots and make sure that we're looking at the best of the best. And when you take that strategy and when you take that focus, even if there's a foot fault, whether it's the market or the company in terms of execution, you're somewhat protected by having the leader in the space. And so our focus is really just trying to find businesses with incredibly solid fundamentals that we believe will be the market leaders in their category or in their market. And while valuations are full, we do think that that strategy is a winning strategy as we focus on the best of breed assets and management teams.
And I would add that, yes, valuations are high to very high to very, very high. But I think that there are probably two things that John Gray, Blackstone's president, has instilled in us, one of which is invest in good neighborhoods. And so thinking about industries where there are macro tailwinds and ultimately, you know, you're choosing the winners amongst those industries can really ensure that you're set up for success more broadly. And the other thing that he says is only Blackstone knew what Blackstone knows. And so ensuring that we're thinking about the talent and the insights that reside within Blackstone and across our portfolio companies, and being able to unlock all of that insight such that we're able to make better investment decisions and see around corners, I think has also been able to help us navigate this very elevated valuation time period. I don't know, Anne, if there's anything else you would add.
No, I think that's right. What that reminds me also is that in terms of some of the underwriting that we do, and Spanx is a great example of this, is that we're also looking for high quality assets in good neighborhoods where we at Blackstone, with our resources and our scale, can somehow influence the outcome, right? So we have the ability to access our data science team or our brand strategy team or our procurement operations or our real estate side. And so being able to create advantages by partnering with these businesses because we have our own set of resources that we bring to bear that we think can also be incredibly influential and helpful for these businesses.
It's also been a great seller's market, obviously, because of the valuations, and that has paid off for private equity firms, for Blackstone. Could you talk a little bit about that?
It's been a great market. We evaluate each of our businesses on an individual basis in terms of what the best outcome for those businesses are, right? And we try not to prematurely force companies into some sort of exit because the market is so great today. We're really focused on what is the right thing to do for the long term for these businesses. And so every company is going to have a different outcome and every company is going to be in a different situation. And so we're really catering today's market to what is best for that business based purely on where they are in their life cycle.
I think that's a great way to frame it because, yes, we are focused on ensuring that we're creating liquidity events for our limited partners, given that's the business that we're in, but it's not about timing the market. It's more around building a great business within our portfolio companies and then ensuring that they're set up for success such that if the market is open, we might be able to take advantage of it. But ultimately, we're in the business of building great businesses and we want to make sure that that really is where our primary focus is.
Is there anything that I missed out on asking that you think is important to know or that we should be talking about?
The other thing John Gray always says is stay calm, stay positive, never give up, which is something I think that we feel very strongly about as we think about diversity more broadly across the asset management industry.
And do you have anything else to add?
No, I think you said it perfectly well. It's become our mantra here at Blackstone. And I think not just about the industry, but also about our individual businesses as we think about, like I said, the ability for us to influence the outcomes. There's so much at our disposal and staying calm, staying positive, never giving up, I think is a great way to look at how we think about building value across our portfolio.
Well, on that note, Anne, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Nikita.
Thank you.
This is Nikita Sethiraju, consumer and retail reporter for The Deal. Thanks for joining us for Behind the Buyouts.